The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Thank you for joining us here on this, the Frank Sontag Show. As always, we begin each hour with what we highlight as our impact segment, 20-plus minutes of uninterrupted dialogue and discussion. This impact segment in particular, we're going to dedicate to, well, some changes that may be on the rise in our education system. Now, there's a story out of Oregon I covered a little bit yesterday. I want to get more into it, take calls about the Oregon Department of Education cracking down on, of all things, mathematics. They say it's a form of white supremacy. 82-page document stating their grievances. And we're going to share that in a moment, but I want to begin kind of along the same lines. You may have heard recently in the Bay Area, a number of schools, there were votes by which they're going to change some of the names of the schools. One in particular, I believe it's Abraham Lincoln High School. Because now, with all of the talk about concerns about systemic racism and history, now Abraham Lincoln is not even safe. So, I like the Smithsonian Magazine, and I found a piece written by a man named Jonathan White. I'm not going to read the whole thing, I'll read part of it, but the headline says it all. Black lives certainly mattered to Abraham Lincoln. A look at the president's words and actions during his term shows his true sentiments on slavery and racial equality. Let's read a bit. Last month, the San Francisco Unified School District voted to rename Abraham Lincoln High School because of the former president's policies toward Native Americans and African Americans. As Jeremiah Jeffries, chairman of the renaming committee and a first grade teacher, argued, quote, Lincoln, like the presidents before him and most after, did not show through policy or rhetoric that black lives ever mattered to them outside of human capital and as casualties of wealth building. Such a statement would have perplexed most Americans who lived through the Civil War. On January 1, 1863, Lincoln issued the Emancipation Proclamation, which declared enslaved people in areas under Confederate control to be, quote, forever free, end quote. 2 years later, he used all of the political capital he could muster to push the 13th Amendment through Congress, permanently abolishing slavery in the United States. The San Francisco committee opted not to consult any historians when considering the renaming, which Jeffries justified by saying, quote, what would be the point? History is written and documented pretty well across the board. And so we don't need to belabor history in that regard. End quote. Lincoln, in his time, met hundreds of African Americans in Washington during the war years. Some came to the White House at his invitation. Others walked through the White House gates uninvited and unannounced. Regardless of how they arrived at his doorstep, the president welcomed these visitors with open arms and an outstretched hand. As Frederick Douglass was proud to say after his first White House meeting in August 1863, Lincoln welcomed him, quote, just as you have seen one gentleman receive another, end quote. Black visitors to the White House often remarked that Lincoln treated them with dignity and respect. Many were touched by how he shook their hands and made no acknowledgement of their race or skin color. Lincoln's hospitality toward African Americans came to be well known at the time. As white union nurse Mary Livermore observed, quote, "To the lowly, to the humble, the timid colored man or woman he bent in special kindliness," end quote. Writing in 1866, a Washington journalist similarly noted that, quote, "The good and just heart of Abraham Lincoln prompted him to receive representatives of every class then fighting for the Union. Nor was he above shaking black hands, for hands of that color then carried the stars and stripes or used musket or saber in its defense," end quote. Reading a piece written in the Smithsonian Magazine by Jonathan White. Many today also criticize Lincoln for issuing the Emancipation Proclamation as, quote, "a military necessity," unquote, a policy to help win the war, rather than as a clarion call for justice. Such views have gained currency in the broader popular culture. In 1991, for example, Tupac Shakur rapped, quote, "Honor a man that refused to respect us. Emancipation Proclamation, please. Lincoln just said that to save the nation," end quote. But the truth is, Lincoln needed to justify his controversial action constitutionally as a war measure so that it could hold up in court if it were challenged. Taking this approach does not diminish Lincoln's deeply held moral beliefs about the immorality of slavery. As he said upon signing the proclamation, quote, "My whole soul is in it," end quote. Indeed, Lincoln issued the proclamation out of a moral duty as well as military necessity, as evidenced by a meeting he had with Frederick Douglass toward the end of the war. By August 1864, Lincoln had become convinced that he would lose re-election, allowing an incoming Democratic administration to undo all he had done to bring freedom to the enslaved. The president invited Douglass to the White House, where the two men devised a plan to encourage people still held in bondage to flee to Union lines before Lincoln would be out of office, should he lose. Lincoln said, quote, "Mr. Douglass, I hate slavery as much as you do, and I want to see it abolished altogether," end quote. Lincoln's plan had nothing to do with helping him win the war, as if it was a military necessity, or even the election. But it had everything to do with Lincoln's deep-seated moral disdain for slavery. For his part, Douglass left the meeting with a new understanding of the president's intense commitment to emancipation. Douglass later wrote, quote, "What he said on this day showed a deeper moral conviction against slavery than I had ever seen before in anything spoken or written by him," end quote. Fortunately, nothing ever had to come of this desperate plan. The war took a turn for the better, and Lincoln easily won re-election in November 1864. In the end, Lincoln's welcoming of African Americans to the White House was an act of political courage and great political risk. Indeed, Douglass, probably more than any other person, understood the significance of Lincoln's open-door policy. Douglass shared, quote, "He knew that he could do nothing which would call down upon him more fiercely the vulgarity shown by any respect to a colored man from other people. Or shall I say the perceived vulgarity, when indeed this man loved all humanity." Douglass shared this shortly after Lincoln's assassination. Douglass concluded, quote, "Some men there are who can face death and dangers, but have not the moral courage to contradict a prejudice or face ridicule. In daring to admit, nay, in daring to invite a Negro to an audience at the White House, Mr. Lincoln did that which he knew would be offensive to the crowd and excite their ribaldry. It was saying to the country, I am president of the black people as well as white people, and I mean to respect their rights and feelings as men and as citizens, end quote. Jonathan White, in closing, says, for Lincoln, black lives certainly mattered. Jonathan White is an associate professor of American Studies at Christopher Newport University. He's authored or edited 8 books, including in 2017, which has a chapter on the dreams of African Americans during the Civil War. Now, I read that. Again, San Francisco, they're changing the name of high school. We hear this more and more. We hear it from a current administration. I heard it yesterday. White supremacy. They're everywhere. As if somehow the justification or the need for a monster has to be promoted, by which thousands of military encircle the Capitol, 2 to 3 miles of barbed wire fence, and this ongoing rhetoric from the left about white supremacy. Now, I'm not here to defend anyone that is a lawbreaker, that defies the tenets of the Constitution, and I can go down the line. I'm a man that fears God. I read the Bible. God instituted government to mete out justice. And yet, we kind of live at a time now. I don't want to oversimplify gospel, but this is Isaiah 5:20 time. Good is being spoken as evil, right? We, lovers of the Lord, were the evil ones, as we'll hear a little later from a congressperson, a representative in Philadelphia not that long ago, who's running for lieutenant governor, where he verbally bashed Christians. But I think it's even more than that. Evil is called good. We hear this ongoing narrative now about domestic terrorism. And I want to be careful here. Phone lines we just opened. If you want to call, if you're new to the program, I'm not here to say I have all the answers. I do believe the Bible is the inerrant word of God. I believe it's to be taken literally, unlike what theological liberalism or progressive Christianity stands for. But I make mistakes. I'm sinful. I'm flawed. I'm fallible. I need a Savior, and I praise God. Jesus is my Savior and Lord. So this isn't what Frank believes is necessarily the right way, but I hope and pray we all point to the Bible as the right way. Okay, so that's the context. But when I see an administration now that is, well, they're falling all over themselves about illegal immigration, giving them all sorts of rights at taxpayer expense, we hear about this white supremacy. Yesterday we heard it again. What does that exactly mean? Now, I have 2 stories. I'm going to save the best one for last, and I say best with an asterisk. Here's the first one. Woke teachers want Shakespeare cut from curriculum. They say this is about white supremacy. This is a Washington Times story. The crown teachers once put on William Shakespeare now lies uneasy upon his head as the English playwright comes under assault from teachers who fault his unwoke attitudes regarding race, sexuality, gender, and class. For the new breed of teachers, Shakespeare is seen less as an icon of literature and more as a tool of imperial oppression, an author who should be dissected in class or banished from the curriculum entirely. Declared the teachers who founded #DisruptTexts, quote, this is about white supremacy and colonization, end quote. This group wants staples of Western literature removed or subjected to withering criticism. The anti-Shakespeare teachers say fans of the plays ignore the author's problematic worldview. They say readers of Shakespeare should be required to address the, quote, whiteness, end quote, of their thinking. If Shakespeare must be taught, These educators say that it should be presented with watered-down versions of the original or supplemental texts focused on equality issues. School Library Journal, which describes itself as, quote, the premier publication for librarians and information specialists who work with children and teens, end quote, also joined the fight this year and offered young adult novels as alternatives to Shakespeare. Librarians also showcased an essay questioning the contemporary value of the playwright responsible for classics such as Hamlet, Macbeth, and King Lear. An essay titled, To Teach or Not to Teach, Is Shakespeare Still Relevant to Today's Students? Quote, growing number of educators are coming to the conclusion that it's time for Shakespeare to be set aside or de-emphasized to make room for modern, diverse, and inclusive voices, end quote. Shakespeare is far from the only famous author to be squeezed through the social justice cheesecloth. Hashtag Disrupt Texts also went after F. Scott Fitzgerald, William Golding, and other dead white male writers who long dotted high school syllabuses. But Shakespeare became the poster boy for a longer anti-white, anti-male trend in education, said Glenn Custred, a retired anthropology professor in the Cal State University system, who also co-authored of California's Prop 209, which banned racial preferences in state agencies. Custred said, quote, the rationale for purging Shakespeare from the curriculum, as formulated in the standard rhetoric of the left, reveals their agenda, which is the conversion of schools and universities from educational institutions to organs of indoctrination. Since Shakespeare's work has been considered exemplary and universal, these claims must be discredited. Custred said Shakespeare's removal from the curriculum and the collective memory is thus mandatory, end quote. Finally, Shakespeare-averse teachers are urged to assign contemporary young adult novels as replacements or supplements. These include The Hunger Games, Poet X, which details a young black Hispanic teenager in Harlem who rebels against her mother's religious upbringing and finds herself in slam poetry. In teenage literature reviews this year, the School Library Journal often features books wrapped up in race and, quote, queer or lesbian stories, end quote. Shakespeare alternatives celebrated by these liberal teachers and critics offer, quote, something for all teen readers and fans of the bard, such as the retelling of Macbeth from the Me Too generation, end quote, according to an article in the Librarian Journal. Such approaches, narrowly tailored to appeal to slivers of a student body, do college-bound students an injustice and are chiefly screens for infusing students with radical left-wing political concepts, Mr. Wood said. He said, quote, it's a race to the bottom with bad ideas. They present themselves as the all-knowing gurus of wokeness, and on most campuses, they've already won, end quote. 888-528-2557. We're going to take a few calls, and on the other side, we're going to get into the real story in Oregon. Department of Education. Even asking students to show their work in a math class, according to an 82-page document, they say is a form of white supremacy. Brian in Simi Valley. Brian, you're on the Frank Sontag Show.
Hey, good afternoon, Frank. Love the show. Appreciate you, brother. You're doing an awesome job. Just keeping it nice and real and simple. You know what? The whole race war that we're involved with now is getting to the point where we need to go back to the original just simplicity of the New Testament and understanding that God looks at every single human being the same. Doesn't matter if you're black, Asian, white, Hispanic. It shouldn't matter, and we should be fighting for equality and just getting back to simplicity when it comes to, I mean, if God was on our shoulder and everybody was accountable, it'd be a different world. But the world we're in seems like nobody really cares anymore. It's just going off on these tangents, and it's scary.
Well, I think that the perception is of the essence. I don't think by any chance this is in the majority. I think this is a small minority by which the left has always wanted to infiltrate thought. And to have freedom of speech, you have to have freedom of thought. Take away freedom of thought, right around the corner, you take away freedom of speech. But again, this whole white supremacy thing, maybe somebody can call and educate me because I'm at a loss. I heard it yesterday from President Biden. We hear it ongoing. There's an Oregon Department of Education. They say math is basically a form of white supremacy, of which we'll talk about on the other side. But maybe you can help me understand, because I'm at a loss here. Not only do I not get it, some of the logic behind it is just the opposite of that. It seems not only illogical, it seems insane, some of the things that are stated in this 82-page manual, of which we'll talk about in the next segment. But again, if you have a counter view, if you can help me understand, would love to hear from you. 888-528-2557. Maria's in Hawthorne. Maria, you're on the Frank Sontag Show.
Hi, Frank. Always good to hear your voice. I just wanted to say that, I mean, if you've been paying attention, and anyone, even if you're not, you know, religious, like they like to say, it's just they're creeping their way to get rid of the Bible. I mean, they're already done it out of public schools. I see what they're trying to do, and because right now they're on this big power trip of, you know, controlling how we, you know, socialize, how we have to mask up. I mean, they're really taking advantage of the whole situation right now, and they're pushing it. And I mean, people just have to start saying, you know, enough is enough.
Okay, when you say they, who are you talking about? Because I'm really interested in the conversation about white supremacy. So when you allude to they, who are the they that you refer to?
Well, unfortunately, I don't always know the names, but I wouldn't even go as far as attacking the public schools, but whoever's behind the public schools, whoever's running like anything behind the public schools, and who are they taking orders from, to be honest? That's how I could put it.
Okay. Well, you can also say you don't know. I appreciate the call. Thank you, Maria. In terms of public schools, obviously unions, teachers' unions, have a big say. 888-528-2557. I'll say one more thing, we'll break and come back. Probably in the last 8 months, I have never publicly nor privately been called a racist more times than in the last 8 months versus my entire life up until that point. I've always been concerned about the realities of racism. Sometimes I feel the call because I say I don't believe systemic racism exists. It's a belief. Oftentimes the retort is, what, so you don't believe racism exists? It's not the same thing. Of course racism exists. But systemic racism? Or now this idea of, again, white supremacy. Where are all the white supremacists? You know, the left would have you believe that the insurrection was started by, well, you know, him, bad orange man. And it was all white people at the White House. All 350,000, all white people. Yeah, that's not the information I received. Am I for white supremacy? Absolutely not. But I think we need to identify when terms are thrown around as a matter of factly or rhetorically over and over again, like we keep hearing from the new administration, growing of white supremacy, scourge of white supremacy, on and on and on. And the media just like Pavlov's dog, They get all the talking points, and they say the talking points over and over again. What's really going on here? Are you okay with a 3-mile barbed wire fence around the capital of our country? Are you okay with hearing over and over again that in part, if you're a white conservative, theologically, I won't even get into politically, that not only are you part of the problem, but I hear some of the talking heads saying, you're a domestic terrorist. What does this have to do with a Christian program? Christians, Bible-believing Christians, are being told the same. You're part of the problem. The Huffington Post ran a slam piece not that long ago, an amazing slam piece all about what happened January the 6th was all about Christianity. And we as the church, time to wake up. The church shouldn't retreat. And it shouldn't just stand ground or defend ground. The church needs to advance and take ground back from evil. And yet we are the church, and what are we doing? How do we respond? 888-528-2557. 888-528-2557. More of the Frank Sontag Show as we continue next. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. The numbers each and every day to call into the program are 888-528-2557. On our impact segment, I read a commentary about the life and legacy of Abraham Lincoln as it applies to slavery and in the Bay Area. A school board or a group of individuals decided that he was not a friend of anyone in the past as it applies to the issue of slavery, and so Abraham Lincoln High School should be no more. Also, educators are starting to throw out even teaching in literature Shakespeare because he was too much about whiteness. And in a moment after I take a call or two, Oregon Department of Education now says basically mathematics in and of itself is a form of white supremacy. And I need some help here because I'm at a loss for what any of this means. I have my suspicions, but I want to try to understand, where are they getting this stuff? How can they come to these conclusions? And what about the ongoing narrative of the current administration and the media talking about white supremacy on the rise, the scourge of white supremacy, as if it's everywhere? Please help me understand. 888-528-2557. Sam and Tustin. Sam, you're on the Frank Sontag Show.
Hey, Frank, how's it going? I appreciate you having me on the show.
You're always welcome. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I just moved here from Texas, and I'm still trying to get familiar with a lot of the, you know, topics on the radio and stuff, and I came across your program. I find it interesting. And so anyway, I heard a few of the discussions that you were having with some of your listeners, and I'm not exactly 100% sure. Are you asking or are you wondering why there's systematic racism? Is that it? I mean, are you trying to find out why or what's causing white supremacy? I'm not exactly sure how you're looking at this issue.
Well, let me clarify. In terms of white supremacy, I hear so much of it's a problem everywhere. I don't see it that way. I'd like to know specifically, who are they? Where is it happening? And as it applies to the term systemic racism, I don't believe it exists. And yet, I'd like to understand those that say it does, specifically what they think that means.
Right. Well, you know, it's one of those types of issues where you just can't get a BB gun and shoot a hole and say, I just want to see that one little issue. The process starts many, many years ago, where it becomes a system. You know, it just doesn't happen overnight. So over time, you know, people experience racism. And you have to admit, 100 years, 150 years ago, it was very, it was a, there was a lot of racism everywhere. And you know, we've pretty much funneled down and recognized, you know, what it is and what it isn't, but it hasn't gone away, you know. And for people that don't experience it on a daily, weekly, monthly, or even a yearly basis, it is hard to grasp and understand.
So let me help me understand your thought process. Are you saying what occurred 100 or 150 years ago in this country, as it applies to racism, today in this day and age is one and the same? There's been no change. It's as bad as ever. Is that what you're saying?
No, no, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying just like everything else, racism is dynamic. Just like this virus is dynamic.
Well, yeah, I agree. But there is a difference between the term systemic racism, as if it's in the system and it's always been there, versus the sin of racism, which is indeed a reality and a problem, which to me is more of a spiritual conversation. And I thank you for the call today, and I hope you continue to listen. Hope in Whittier. Hope you're on the Frank Sontag Show.
Hello, I wanted to comment.
Okay, before you say anything, the connection is not good. Are you on a speakerphone? You sound like it's very hollow. It's hard to understand you. And I want to kind of nip that in the bud if we can fix that.
Can you hear me now?
That's a little better.
Oh, that's too bad. Okay, well, I'm on my phone. This is the best that I could do.
No, it's a little better. I can hear you better now. So share, please. Thank you.
Well, I wanted to comment on this white supremacy thing. I'm a Mexican-American, and I just want to say is that the Caucasian people need to stop apologizing for systemic racism. We're in America. We're in a free country. We don't need handouts. If you want to apologize for racism, then you should do so if you personally did something. Otherwise, we need to move on. And I don't like when white liberals, and it's usually women who do this, try to paint us minorities as victims. I tell my children, you are a victor, you are not a victim. I don't accept this media-driven, liberal-driven separation of cultures and races. I do not accept it. And I wish that white people would take pride in their culture and stop apologizing for things that you didn't do.
Hope, I'm thankful for your call, and I do thank you for sharing. It reminds me over the summer when we saw a bit of what was going on in inner cities across the country, supposedly under the auspices of peaceful protesting, addressing the realities of racism, even though businesses burned and looted, people were hurt, the left said nothing, police were demonized, and that went on for a while. And then all of a sudden, we started seeing things like, quote-unquote, Christian people, or even churches, kneeling down in front of black people and apologizing as if this is was a good thing. Now, hear me loud and clear. If we stand together as brother and sister in the Lord and agree we kneel together to God above all, and together we want to address the sin of racism, that's one thing. But when groups of people, white people, kneel down in front of black people and ask for forgiveness, sorry, I'm not down with that program. And pastors were urging that this summer. Now it's turned into, again, now we hear about white supremacy and the scourge of it and the rise of it and the cause of it. Who are these people? When we continue, a story out of Oregon, and how now math is being termed a form of white supremacy. If it wasn't so crazy and real, I would dismiss it as nothing but insanity. But it's here. More of the Frank Sontag Show next. Thank you for joining us here on the Frank Sontag Show. This next story, this next article has to be categorically one of the most bizarre things I've ever read in my life, and yet it's being pushed forth as being true. Let me read the story and then I'll share some of my thoughts. A mathematics guide sent out to Oregon schools tells educators that asking students to show their work in math class is a form of white supremacy. In an email sent out by the Oregon Department of Education, teachers were encouraged to enroll in a course called, quote, "A Pathway to Equitable Math Instruction," end quote. Course came with an 82-page instructional guide that lists the ways in which white supremacy is perpetuated in math class. Quote, "White supremacy culture infiltrates math classrooms and everyday teacher actions. Coupled with the beliefs that underlie these actions, they perpetuate educational harm on Black, Latinx, and multilingual students, denying them full access to the world of mathematics." End quote. The guide offers a year-long framework for, quote, "deconstructing racism in mathematics." It calls for visibilizing the toxic characteristics of white supremacy culture with respect to math, end quote. Now, if you're not listening going, what? Latinx, thank you. Thank you for correcting me on that. We want to make sure we say it the right way. Oh, my goodness, yes. A word that was not in the English language until recently. Am I not correct in saying that, Wilbert? All of a sudden, this is a word. Right, okay. Let me read on here. Examples of classroom actions that allegedly perpetuate white supremacy include asking students to show their work, focusing on getting the right answer, tracking student success, and grading students. The guide claims that asking students to show their work is a crutch for teachers to understand what students are thinking. Can you imagine? Teachers, why would we want to know what students are thinking or their thought process, right? This is considered white supremacy because it allegedly reinforces, quote, "paternalism and worship of the written word," end quote. Worship of the written word is an alleged foundation of white supremacy culture, which reinforces documentation and writing skills. Math classes that focus on helping students to get the right answer are also a form of perpetuating white supremacy. In other words, in math, there's no right answer. The guide literally claims that calling answers right and wrong perpetuates objectivity, which is considered a tenet of white culture. The guide also says, quote, "The concept of mathematics being purely objective is unequivocally false, and teaching it is even much less so. Upholding the idea that there are always right and wrong answers perpetuate objectivity," end quote. I guess to fly an airplane and the mathematics that need to be calculated, that's white supremacy. Landed on the moon. I mean, it boggles the mind, but there's more. Tracking students is considered problematic as well. The guide considers tracking students a form of paternalism and power hoarding, as it's based on the idea, get ready, that adults know what is right for students. Shocking. The guide considers it a form of power hoarding because it's based on the idea that adults know what's right for students. Finally, to be more culturally inclusive, teachers must, quote, adapt homework policies to fit the needs of students of color. Not sure what that means. Teachers are also asked to, quote, identify and challenge the ways that math is used to uphold capitalistic, imperialistic, and racist views, end quote. Finally, the instructional material also suggests teachers expose students to examples of people who have used math as a form of, quote, resistance, end quote. And here I used to think 1 + 1 = 2. Now, what do you do with that? I haven't looked at the phone board. It looks full. For those of you that stay with us in the next hour, I'll take a look. Maybe I'll take some calls. But we live in a day and age where there are some, and I believe they're few and far between, where for me simply to question this 82-page instructional manual pathway to equitable math instruction, because I'm a white guy, I just don't understand. I don't have the awareness, or somehow it's in me that I have racism automatically in me at birth. It is it's getting to be really interesting. Now we have a new administration, mouthpiece of the left, policies of the left. Hate this country. All the forefathers somehow all owned slaves. They were all racist. And so there's nothing good about the country. Nothing that any of the tenets. We'll even throw out the Constitution now. Declaration of Independence. National Anthem. What did President Biden say the other day about the National Anthem? And yet, at least we are told that in terms of numbers, half the country evidently buys into this. The other half of the country is saying, what are you talking about? And so for me, whatever the issue is, I see a lot of this as a follower of Christ and one that believes in the Bible. I see above all that this is a manifestation in the physical realm of what started in the spiritual realm. The Bible talks about spiritual warfare. Now, I know to the world that sounds like, oh, you Jesus freaks, you just have no idea. You have to have a belief in the devil. Here's the irony. You want to know the irony of this? The left always needs a scapegoat. They have to keep a monster alive. That's the reason why you keep hearing things like white supremacy. The left has to push victim mentality. You talk about issues like children without fathers, breakdown of the family. And many evangelicals, white evangelicals, because we voted for the past president, we're a large part of the problem. You hear about white supremacy, problem, Antifa, just an idea, not even real. Or they were just peaceful protesting. Don't even get me going on the media and the tech giants and the ongoing banter of mouthpieces of just regurgitating talking points. We did an expose yesterday on journalism and how it's basically dead. Played some audio of Brit Hume, one of the old warriors from the days of journalism. But now, it's all about my way or the highway. You either believe these things exist or you're the problem, and we will shut you up. You will pay the price. You will be prosecuted. You will be censored. What's next? Hate speak in the church? That's a possibility. This is the Frank Sontag Show.